Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
It's exactly 5 p.m. here in Bonn, Germany. Hello and a very warm welcome to DW's Africa Link program. My name is Jane Nyinge.
And I'm Jane Ayeko Kumet. We are also live on Facebook. That's DW Africa. So do join the conversation there. Coming up, South African companies could suffer financial losses as neighboring countries put a ban on meat products from the country.
It has huge implications for the companies. Probably the biggest, I think, corporate scandal, even bigger probably than the London-Marikana link.
Also in the program, we'll head to Burkina Faso for the very latest on the investigations in reaction to last Friday's twin attack that killed 16 people.
There are at least two investigations going on. And apart from the claim by the jihadist organization, which is led by the Malian Iyad Aghali, there has been no other statement to the effect that who actually did this.
Well, stick around for the full interview with our West Africa contributor, Bram Posthumus, who has been closely monitoring events in Burkina Faso.
Yes, those stories and a lot more shall be coming up shortly. But first, here is a chance to listen to what's been happening around the world.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. North and South Korean officials have reportedly agreed on Tuesday to hold a joint summit late next month after diplomats from both countries met in South Korea's capital, Seoul. The North reportedly agreed to discuss abandoning its nuclear weapons if its security is guaranteed and if threats against it are resolved. The summit talks are expected to take place near the North-South Korean border and will be the first such meeting since North Korean leader Kim Jong-un took power in 2011. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson has set off for his first official African tour, where he's expected to visit Chad, Djibouti, Ethiopia, Kenya, and Nigeria. Ahead of the trip, Donald Yamamoto, the Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, told DW that Tillerson is expected to discuss trade and security during his week-long trip.
He'll be meeting with the African Union commissioners to talk about the fundamental issues that are challenging Africa, which is South Sudan, DRC, Somalia, also the G5 country in support for security. But more important is looking at economic growth and opportunities.
In Sierra Leone, mass rallies were held in the capital, Freetown, and elsewhere as 3 million eligible voters prepared to elect a new president and parliament on Wednesday. Several candidates have been vying to replace President Ernest Koroma, who has served 2 terms in office. Although corruption has been a key component leading up to the elections, ruling party presidential candidate Samora Kamara told DW his party would continue to fight misconduct.
Corruption is always there. In any country in the world, there is corruption. It depends on the magnitude of corruption. But what it means also on the sanctions against corrupt activities, against corrupt persons. And I think we have made a lot of efforts in strengthening the fight against corruption in this country. And we're going to continue with that.
This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. Indian tax officials have raided properties linked to the Gupta family in several towns near capital New Delhi on Tuesday after officials suspected the family of bringing illegal money made from abroad into India. South African watchdogs have accused the Indian-born Gupta family of colluding with the former president, Jacob Zuma, to influence policy and amass wealth. Zuma and the Gupta brothers have denied any wrongdoing. German Foreign Minister Sigmar Gabriel and Defense Minister Ursula von der Leyen have reportedly discussed plans to boost troop numbers in conflict-hit Mali. 100 more soldiers could join a 1,000-strong force in Mali if the German parliament approves the plan. And in other news, space exploration company SpaceX has launched its 50th Falcon 9 rocket on Tuesday. The U.S.-based company, led by Elon Musk, launched into orbit a telecommunications satellite from Cape Canaveral, Florida. The company debuted in 2010. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link, broadcasting from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I'm Jane Ayeko Kumet.
And my name is Jane Nyinge. We'd love to hear from you. Please drop us your comment on our Facebook page. That is DW Africa.
Now, South African meat companies could suffer huge financial losses if listeria crisis is not addressed very fast. This follows a ban on processed meat from the country from several countries within the region. The South African Ministry of Health has since ordered an immediate recall of ready-to-eat meats. As Tuzo Kumalo reports, this has caused panic far beyond the country's borders.
The announcement implies that these companies will have to fully refund tons of these meats returned by retail shops, supermarkets and customers. Mozambique, Namibia, Botswana, Zambia and Zimbabwe have added to these companies' troubles by banning imports of the affected products. Experts say the financial implications will be huge, first on the returned products and secondly on the stopped exports to these countries. One of the fingered companies, Tiger Brands, had its market share falling by up to 7% and wiping over 300 million euro. Lawrence McDougall, the CEO of Tiger Brands, which supplies 25% of these ready-to-eat meats in and outside South Africa, says it will be a while before they know the financial impact of the recall and the ban by some countries.
If you ask me if I've considered the financial impact in the industry, yes, that is a consequence of what we are doing, but I need to put the health and safety of the consumers first before that.
So far, 108 people have already died from listeria and close to 1,000 are infected. Should they take action against the identified companies, this could have huge financial implications. Viv Govender is a market analyst.
It has huge implications for the companies, probably the biggest, I think, corporate scandal, even bigger probably than the London Marikana link. And it's also not just local as well. I mean, we've seen international operations also being affected. I think Zambia has come out and said they want all processed meat, not just from enterprise, but from all South African retailers to be under scrutiny or recalled.
And the Minister of Health, Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi, says there would be more trouble if these companies are found to have failed to uphold the cleanliness standards.
For instance, agriculture will take away their export certificates. The National Consumer Commission will tell them that you can't produce until you have met this and that standards. So it means they'll have to close up for some time and start cleaning up and start meeting those standards.
The World Health Organization has described the listeriosis outbreak in South Africa as the largest ever linked to food poisoning. The disease is caused by a bacterium called monocytogenes.
Tuzo Kumalo with that report.
Jane, and I think this is a story or a report that is causing a lot of panic, not only in South Africa, but right across Africa.
Yes, I mean, we all know that South Africa does a lot of export of meat products beyond its neighbouring. Even in East Africa, we do enjoy lots of sausages from South Africa. That's a little bit terrific and scary. But we hope the problem is rectified.
Absolutely. Let's now head to the West African country of Burkina Faso. And investigations are still going on in reaction to last Friday's twin attack on French embassy and the country military headquarters in the capital, Ouagadougou, that killed 16 people and left at least 80 others injured. Two suspects believed to have played a key role in the attack are in police custody, and the search continues for those at large. Earlier, I spoke to Bram Posthumus, our West Africa contributor based in Mali, but has been closely monitoring events in Burkina Faso since the attack. And he starts by telling us what he knows about the investigations.
As far as the investigations go, we've got two teams on the ground. There is obviously an official inquiry by the court in Ouagadougou. That's being run by the Burkinabe authorities. And then the French have flown in a team as well. I'm not sure whether there is any collaboration between the two. One would imagine that there would be. But there are at least two investigations going on. And apart from the claim by the jihadist organization, which is led by the Malian Iyad Aggali, there has been no other statement to the effect that there is any more clarity about who actually did this.
Bram, you've mentioned a jihadist group in Mali that has already claimed responsibility. And there are reports that some of the attackers were wearing military uniforms. Is there a possibility that the group has infiltrated the Burkinabe military?
That is something that unfortunately must not be ruled out. This goes back to very, very old ties that were in existence between the previous government of former President Blaise Compaoré and a number of these jihadist leaders who at the time were actually more acting like common criminals, abducting people and smuggling drugs. I'm pretty sure that inquiries are also going in that direction, and that is also what I'm hearing from all the sources I speak to in Ouagadougou.
Now, we understand two head of states, President Mahamadou Issoufou of Niger and Togolese President Faure Gnassingbé met with President Kabore and visited the sites of the attack. How significant was this visit?
Quite significant, because these are signs of solidarity from two distinct organizations, one that's been well established and another one that's basically being set up as we speak. The established organization is obviously ECOWAS. And yes, ECOWAS has been trying to make some headway in bringing various conflicts to an end in the region. They simply haven't got the financial wherewithal to pull this off. The other one is obviously the new G5 regional anti-terrorist organization. That's actually seen as a replacement for French military presence in the region. The president of Niger, Issoufou, is currently the chair of that G5 organization, and they are supposed to be fighting terrorism, well, beginning now, actually. So, yes, shows of solidarity, shows of support.
That was Bram Posthumus, our West Africa contributor based in Mali, just giving us the latest on the investigations following the twin attack in Burkina Faso that left 16 people dead. Let's now head to another story. And U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson has started his first African visit that will take him to Chad, Djibouti, Ethiopia, Nairobi, Kenya, and Nigeria. He will meet with leaders of those countries along with African Union leadership based in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa.
Now, key on Tillerson's agenda is security and trade and investment. But without a proper policy on Africa, we ask the question why the U.S. Secretary is making this visit at this point in time. DW's Washington correspondent, Kirsten von Namen, has been telling me. Take a listen.
Well, the U.S. government has painted this as a follow-up to a big ministerial meeting that Tillerson had with a number of African foreign ministers here in Washington, D.C. in November.
How significant is this visit, considering, or rather given, the not-so-good relationship between the Trump administration and the African continent?
Well, it is significant in the sense that Mr. Tillerson and the Trump administration are making this effort at all. And I think Mr. Tillerson's visit is part of a goodwill mission, if you like, to demonstrate that the U.S. government has not forgotten about Africa. The question, of course, is how significant is Mr. Tillerson as a person, as an ambassador to Donald Trump, because the foreign minister, Secretary of State Tillerson, has been pretty embattled here in the U.S., and very often Donald Trump has contradicted his foreign ministers.
In other words, this is meant to suggest that, or rather to change the rhetoric about the perception of the U.S. to Africa, as you put it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is very important. And of course, Mr. Tillerson knows that Africa is an important factor. It is a continent with a huge economic potential, and the United States would make a strategic mistake, according to a number of observers here in the U.S., also, if it would not look into economic potential there. Others like China, like Russia, Turkey might fill the void.
DW's Kirsten von Namen in Washington. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Africa Link with me, Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And my name is Jane Nyinge. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, Sierra Leoneans head to the ballot tomorrow on Wednesday. DW's Abubakar Jallow caught up with the two main presidential contenders.
These people have been spending money they don't have. They've wrecked the economy.
Inflation is below 10%. The problem about the opposition members is that they don't understand economic management.
Still to come, we shall also be hearing about the debate on free food ratios that is taking place here in Germany. But we now want to take on from that on that Sierra Leonean story. As they head to polls tomorrow to cast their ballots for the next president, 16 candidates have been pitted against one another. Each of them wants to be the successor, but three of them are likely to have more chances and probably go for a rerun. Now, DW's Abubakar Jallow has been speaking to some of them, and now let's hear what they had to say.
16 parties and candidates are taking part in these elections, and it's the first time more than two candidates have real chances of winning. The political newbie in this race, former head of the United Nations Industrial Programme UNIDO, Kande Kole Yumkeller, has been on the offensive ever since he joined the race. Yumkeller told DW that the ruling APC party was leading a kleptocratic regime.
These people have been spending money they don't have. They've wrecked the economy. Inflation 17%, 70% youth unemployment. Over 70% of the population lives on less than $2 a day. Highest maternal mortality rate in the world. WHO had a report last year, highest youth mortality rate in the world. What is there to report about that is positive here? They are so corrupt, we've never seen it. And what are they doing? They're dividing this country ethnically because they know they're scared.
But the presidential candidate for the ruling All People's Congress Party, Samora Kamara, disagreed with Yumkeller's accusations. In a DW interview, he said Yumkeller doesn't understand how government works.
Inflation is below 10%. The problem about the opposition members is that they don't understand economic management. They don't have the right information. For an economy that climbed up to one of the highest growth rates in the world, 20.5% in 2013. Then Ebola came in 2014. It swallowed it up and went down to minus 21% GDP. And now we're at around 6%.
Since Yumkeller joined the presidential race 2 years ago, he has ramped up the debate, influencing it into issue-based politics. He has been attacking the government on corruption and on the mismanagement of the Ebola fund, which was set up by private donors to fight the outbreak of Ebola.
It is only in my country that you expand a 5-kilometer road in the middle of the country, in the middle of the main city, 5 kilometers, you expand it for over $20 million. No flyovers, you're just adding two more lanes in a place that existed. You didn't break down houses, you didn't cut any hills. And I can give you 5, 6, 7 examples of roads that are being constructed that way. It is only in my country that they stole $14 million during Ebola while 4,000 of our people were dying.
I put these accusations again to the APC's presidential candidate, Kamara, who had this to say.
Ebola was killing people at more than 100, 150 a day. And therefore, that's why most people took on those ad hoc expenditures. It was difficult to get records. It's not that it was stolen, it disappeared. It helped towards the fight against Ebola.
For many Sierra Leoneans, the choice for whom to vote has never been this difficult. In Sierra Leone's first elections, where several of these key issues have been debated.
Africa Link's Abubakar Jallow on the ground. And tomorrow, as they go for polls, Abubakar will be bringing us up to date, and we shall keep you updated both on radio as well as on social media platform.
Absolutely. And when I look on our Facebook page, DW Africa, Edison Tor says, my prayer and thoughts for the people of Sierra Leone as they engage, they go to the poll tomorrow for their presidential and legislative elections. And we have this one from Tejan Mustafa Kalon, and he says, KK is our only leader in Sierra Leone. He's talking about a presidential candidate known as KK.
Yeah, but it's interesting, as we had Abu there telling us what's happening, that it's the first time that Sierra Leonean elections are actually conducted where candidates are actually speaking about the real matters. And what are the real matters? It's what we often talk about in elections in the bigger part of Africa, and that's corruption and ethnicity. We can only keep praying that everything goes very smoothly tomorrow and after the elections.
Yes, indeed. And you know, Jane, there are 16 candidates to be voted.
Yeah.
Looking for one seat, 16 of them.
It's an interesting case.
Africa on the move.
Now, even in today's world of equal opportunities, it is often thought that science and maths are subjects for men and boys. In Kenya, this is definitely still a popular belief, but in the country's second capital city, Mombasa, girls and women are defying the cultural norms by excelling in scientific disciplines, not just in secondary school, but right up to university and college level.
Just as a reminder, 8th Thursday is the International Women's Day. And to celebrate that day, our own Diana Wanyonyi in Mombasa met up with a young group of girls who are busy showing that science education is not just for the boys, but for them too. Take a listen.
The girls chatting and laughing outside the Swahili Port Hub building are all part of Pwani Techno Girls organization. The organization began in 2015 to inspire girls and women at schools and university to get involved in and make careers in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics.
When I went to college, I entered in a class where I wanted to learn computer science and technology. There were only 3 girls out of 30 men. So I said, we should empower more girls to use technology so that we can grow.
Latifa Wanja has been a member of the organization since she was 20. On completing secondary school, she developed a mobile phone application known as Usalama +++. Usalama is a Swahili word meaning security. She explains how the application works.
The first plus is about the security itself. The second plus, the GIS could locate where garbage locations are because there's a lot of garbage in Mombasa. Third plus, it's about using technology like the robotics to have sensors in your home. So when someone just comes in your home and he or she is not invited, you can just get a notification in your phone.
Laura Achieng is 17. Just like Latifa, she has created a mobile phone application known as Shine that aims to solve the inaccessibility of reading materials and its distribution in schools.
We were able to come up with the problems facing the community and create solutions. So at that moment, we were looking at the accessibility of books to the students, and we decided that let's create an app that the students will be able to link the business people who are dealing with distribution of books and to the schools. We called it Shine App because we wanted all the students to be able to shine. Through that app, I was able to identify myself in the field of technology.
It's now 3 o'clock in the afternoon. The lecture class is about to start on the first floor of Swahili Port Hub building. All the lectures are meant for female students only, and today there are 15 girls present. Aisha Abdul Kadir, an officer at the organization, says a lack of female mentors in scientific disciplines has posed a major challenge in Kenya.
In Africa, there are a lot of opportunities that are available for women in science and technology. But unfortunately, we see a lot of women who are very passionate, girls who are very passionate, but they lack female mentors who can actually guide them through their career life. So Pwani Techno Girls, we are there to bridge that gender gap. We create a platform for these girls to interact, share experience, and also mentor each other at the same time, what we call peer mentorship.
Pwani Techno Girls has so far worked with 180 girls in secondary schools and 4 universities in Mombasa and reached more than 400 girls and young women in science.
That was Diana Wanyonyi reporting from Mombasa. Now, this week on our 77% program, we are dedicating it to celebrating women who are proving to the world that they are more than just a female sex gender. Anyhow, and we've been carrying out this debate on our social media platform. We did ask you a question: in this era, as we continue to fight for women's rights and equality as well as justice, does a woman still have to work twice as hard to prove that she can? And you've been conversing on this.
Ibrahim Jallo from Gambia says, yes, women should work hard more so that their male counterparts will improve their skills in their respective countries.
Yes, and Joseph from Yaounde, Cameroon says 98.5% of women in Africa are pushing with their last energy to be recognized, while in the Western world, it is a different story. It's only 45%. Also, an interesting statistical observation there coming in from Joseph in Cameroon.
And Kimi Sangwe, also from Cameroon, says it's just a crazy world where some feel they are more superior than others because of their gender, race, and religion. And that is why, Jane, I say the most important thing, even if you're a woman, is just believing in yourself. If you believe in yourself to achieve something, you can be able to achieve.
Exactly.
Despite your gender.
Certainly. And one last one here coming in from Tanwani Ifendi. It's interesting that people express their opinions differently. He says women can never be equal to men. It's like he compares it to an atomic bomb being compared to a grenade. But that's his opinion.
Please head on our Facebook page, DW Africa, and keep that conversation going.
Focus Europe.
Here in Germany, more and more people have been forced to rely on charity food because they are not able to feed themselves or their families. The centers that provide free food have been overstretched, forcing some to introduce restrictions by giving free food only to those with a German passport unless they are already registered members. This has sparked a nationwide debate, with some calling it discrimination among foreigners who also need charity food. From Berlin, Lovdi writes with the details.
Das ist offen Gemüse.
Yeah.
Okay.
A bunch of vegetables for a soup. A leek. Some of the first things customers at this food bank are collecting. It's one of the 45 food banks in Berlin. This one runs once a week out of a tall red brick church in Reinickendorf, a poor northern district of the capital. They'll help to feed 130 households in the area, around 350 people. So what do the volunteers here think about Essen Food Bank's decision?
I think the head of the Essen Food Bank worded his decision rather poorly.
That's Ingrid Winterhager, who's been helping to organise this food bank since it started more than 11 years ago. And here's the statement the Essen Food Bank put on its website.
Due to the increase in the number of refugees in recent years, the number of foreigners among our customers has now reached 75%. We therefore feel we have been forced, in order to ensure proper integration, only to accept new customers who have a German ID for the time being.
Jörg Sartor, head of the Essen Food Bank, told a local newspaper that some of the foreigners had been pushing and shoving in the queue, with no consideration for the German grandmothers waiting to collect food. But does that justify his decision to exclude them?
I completely agree with the Berlin Food Bank statement that people in need are not split into first and second class. The challenge, and I think this is a situation the Essen Food Bank is coming from, is that we have to keep being able to do what we do. A lot of the customers here are foreigners or refugee families, and that does come with its challenges for us, not only with the language, but also they're not used to our food, and they need a lot of support, which can mean other people might end up feeling a bit neglected.
Across Germany, around a quarter of food bank customers are asylum seekers. That makes them the second largest group receiving the donations, after the unemployed and before pensioners. That's according to a 2016 survey by the National Food Bank Organization. The Berlin Food Bank Group says that following the mass refugee arrivals 3 years ago, it took on around 4,000 new customers around the city.
That was DW's Lovdi Wright.
That's all we had time for. Thank you so much for listening to Africa Link. My name is Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And my name is Jane Nyinge. Please keep that conversation going on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Bye-bye.